You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is John Elter, J. Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
It's yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. I'm your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. The usual co-host, Mr. Brendan Lear. He'll be along in a few minutes. We've got an action-packed program today. BJ Penn, former USC champion, Season 5 Ultimate Fighter head coach. He's going to be on the program. That, I guess, goes, the premiere of that goes tomorrow night or tonight, depending on when you're listening to this. He's got that big fight with Jens Pulver, the big rematch coming up at the conclusion of Season 5. Sounds like there's a little bit of animosity building up between these two, so I'll have to ask BJ all about that. Then we're also going to have Sam Sheridan, the second part to that segment that Brendan Lear interviewed. Sam, MMA author, Fighter's Heart. The first segment was really well received, so if you want to check it out, if you missed it, just check out the archives on fcfighter.com and go to the archives. That was on the last show before this one, so if you missed the first part, you can still listen to that segment with Sam Sheridan, and tonight this is going to be the second part to that interview. It was about an hour long originally, so we split it into two segments. And then to conclude the show, we've got Roger Hollett, recently won the Extreme Cage Combat Light Heavyweight Championship up in Halifax this past weekend, defeating Ricardo Francois. Have Roger on the show, and for Canadian fans, it sounds like there's going to be a great light heavyweight matchup between Jason Day and Roger Hollett go at the Maximum Fighting Championships this summer, so we'll have to ask Roger about that as well. So stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Live at the Mark of the Quad Cities, Moline, Illinois, Saturday, April 7th, 7:30 p.m., the International Fight League brings you explosive fighting action with championship-caliber athletes in its world premiere season. See which team will reign supreme when Pat Miletich's Silverbacks battle Ken Shamrock's Lions and Maurice Smith's Tiger Sharks face Igor Zinoviev's Red Bears in a full evening of non-stop fighting action. Get your tickets now at the Mark of the Quad Cities box office, Ticketmaster.com, or call Ticketmaster at 563-326-1111.
When you think mixed martial arts, there's only one name that instills fear. Fedor Emelianenko. Watch two MMA legends when the number one ranked heavyweight fighter Fedor Emelianenko takes on one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the world in Bodog Fight, Fedor Emelianenko versus Matt Lindley. Plus, see Fedor's brother Alexander Emelianenko battle Eric Pele and more Saturday, April 14th, only on pay-per-view. Visit BodogFight.com/PPV for details.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio is the former UFC welterweight champion of the world, BJ Penn. BJ, how are you doing this afternoon?
What's going on, man?
I can't complain.
I just worked out.
Yeah?
Getting ready. I'm going to be getting in good condition.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. You're going to be taking on Jens Pulver as soon as the next season of Ultimate Fighter concludes, and I understand you're going to be at the fights tomorrow night, probably going to get asked a few questions, I'm sure, about the upcoming season of the Ultimate Fighter, which you're a coach for.
Yep, I'm probably
going to
get asked a couple questions.
Probably going to get cornered by Joe Rogan on air, and of course you can't really give away anything specific about the upcoming season as far as results, etc. But looking back on it, BJ, what were your thoughts? Good experience overall?
It was a good experience overall. Meeting all kinds of different personalities, working with different personalities on my team, totally other team, with the higher-ups at Spike and everybody. It was good. It was busy. You know, I was really excited to do it in the beginning. It got real busy. It got real draining physically, mentally, emotionally. And I just started just separating myself from the fights emotionally, because I can't be going there every couple of days and watching a fight and feeling bad if my guy wins or if he loses, or you know what I mean? So it was tough.
That's a little bit of a different format this year, being all lightweight fighters. Did that affect anything? Was it more competitive because there were 16 fighters in one division?
Yeah, I mean that was the whole thing. Bottom line, there's two teams, but we all know there's only one contract.
Yeah.
So, the games, the mind games just never stop. In the house, at the gym, on the teams, mind games the whole time.
So it sounds like it could be an interesting season to watch. I know last year, Ultimate Fighter 4, some people commented that there perhaps wasn't enough drama, not enough incidents, so to speak. Is season 5 going to have more of that kind of thing, or is that something that doesn't really matter, you don't feel?
Well, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, and a lot of great fights. I mean, you put that two together, and hopefully you can beat season 4, huh?
Yeah. Well, let's look ahead then to Jens Pulver. It sounds like, BJ, that there's a little bit of animosity building up. I know, Jens, there's been some interviews, etc., where it seems like things aren't as amicable as perhaps they once were. Is that just something you think that's going on to build up the hype for the fight, or is there some general dislike between the two of you?
Yeah, he's just a complainer, you know what I mean, and this and that, and he always likes to give these long speeches, and it's just like, shut the fuck up already. Ridiculous.
Do you, as far as referring to your first fight, when you look back on that now, does that get a little tiresome? Do you look at it thinking that's kind of way in the past and it shouldn't even be really a point of interest any longer?
Yeah, no, really what it is Jens tried his hardest to never make this fight happen again. And he knew he couldn't turn it down because he was going to be on television, be on the show as a coach and this and that. So, and now it's getting close, the fight's going to happen, and I think like a hysteria or almost something is kicking in, and he's just talking, saying all this, I lit a fire under him, I'm going to knock out all his teeth. I think he's just getting real scared. I think he's just an insecure guy, you know, that, like, I heard I don't know for sure, I don't know how much he trained with his teammate, you know, that with his guys on his team. I don't know, you know. I just think he's a real insecure guy, but I don't know. He's weird. We just from two different parts of the world, and we just I don't know. We don't know what makes each other tick, I guess.
Well, what do you think the effects of the Joe Lozon knockout will have on Jens? Do you think that's going to make him hungrier to train for his fight with you, or is that going to give him a moment to pause? Is that going to be a mental block for him losing that fight?
No, that's going to make him. This is it. This is Jens. This is his last final stand. You know, and he's going to give everything he's got, everything he has. And this is it. I mean, let's face it, this is it. Somebody who, I'm sure he's fired up to fight me. You know what I mean? But, who cares? You know, it's no big deal. But I know he's going to be in best shape, best mental, you know what I mean? Because he knows this is a big chance. He wins, you know what I mean? Then, just like every great fighter, great champion, all it takes is one win and everybody forgives everything again. So, you know, he knows that.
BJ, I think a lot of people want to know what's in store for your future, and I know you probably don't want to look beyond the fight with Jens, but you had the fight against Matt Hughes, things were going so well, and then you incurred the injury. What is BJ Penn's plans for after Jens Pulver? Are we going to see you staying at lightweight or welterweight?
You know what? It all really comes down to what I get offered next, you know? So, I don't know what I honestly don't know either. It's what offer I get made next after this fight.
Sorry.
You know, who are they going to suggest that they would like to see me fight, and then we'll sit down and then we'll start talking. But it's definitely about moving forward in my career right now. You know, I'm not getting any younger. I'm 28 now. I'm entering my prime. I'm in my prime. This is it, and it's time. Time to start moving forward.
Now, you've probably been asked a lot of questions about the injury you incurred during the fight with Hughes.
My bathroom. Inside my gray bag, on the side pocket. What's that?
I was just saying that you got asked a lot of questions about the injury you incurred against Matt Hughes. Did it bother you somewhat that after the fact it seemed like either the UFC or his camp sort of, regardless of the doctor's diagnosis, continued to say that you were out of shape and then that was the reason that you gassed in the third round?
Yeah, that doesn't bother me at all. That's a fight game. That's how it is. You know, like, they always try to put... I mean, every time I talk to Dana, he talks to me about how Matthews is the greatest fighter of all time and this and that, and I don't believe it, you know. I know he's not the greatest of all time, but, I mean, no, he's got some wonderful accolades. I mean, let me not talk that about any of that. I mean, he's a great champion. He's done a lot of great things, but I just don't feel the same as Dana, where he's the greatest fighter that ever lived and this and that stuff. So, you know, I mean, he can... sit there, they can say that Jens can run for the first two rounds if he wants to. Hell, Jens can run for 13 minutes, you know what I mean? And let's fight the last two if that's what he wants to do. You know, up to him. Gas me out, Jens. Let's do it. Make me tired. See how much I can take.
What are your thoughts on the this weekend's GSP Matt Serra fight? And I've been asking a few of the guys that have been on the show, and more so to the point where it seems like everybody's looking past Matt Serra. Everyone's assuming that there's going to be a GSP Matt Hughes part three. Do you think some people are overlooking Matt Serra a little too much, BJ?
Never count out Matt Serra. Never count him out.
Do you think George St.
Pierre? I don't know. I'm not sitting here saying Matt Serra's going to win.
Yeah.
I think it's honestly, I think it's better for mixed martial arts if St. Pierre wins. And better for the sport. Better for big money. Better for Matt Hughes. But don't ever count out Matt Serra. You know what I mean? Somebody with that kind of submission, don't count him out.
With GSP, do you think he's got the mindset you fought him, and in comparison to someone like Matt Hughes? It seems like George kind of keeps his thoughts to himself a little bit more than Matt Hughes does, obviously. Some people look at George St. Pierre and wonder whether or not
I think he's on the juice? Nah, I don't think he's on the juice.
No. I was going to ask you if he's got the type of personality you think that would even look past someone like Matt Serra. Do you think he's a pretty humble guy and takes every fight serious?
Yeah, no, I hope St. Pierre goes out and takes this fight serious. You know, he's got to take this fight serious to beat Matt Serra. Matt Serra's no joke, man, you know?
Yeah.
He's no joke. He can step in on any day and beat anyone else. But St. Pierre's better for this. You know what it is? What it is you got 5 minutes to do something. And St. Pierre's strong enough and in good enough shape to try to hold out if you got him in any bad position. It's just, the whole thing has changed. The judging is such a joke. All a guy has to do is get you with one takedown, push you in the corner, don't even land one punch, and he wins the round. I mean, you're fighting him, you're fighting the clock, you're fighting judges who've never wrestled in their life. I mean, the whole thing is just a joke. You know what I mean? But, you know, I mean, if Matt Serra can freaking get something, St. Pierre is so strong, it's going to be hard for Matt Serra to get anything. But if Matt Serra, you know, but if anybody can do it, as far as pull a submission on him, it's going to be Serra. But, I mean, how is Matt even going to take him down? Is he just going to push him on the fence like he does to a lot of people, slow it down, stomp his feet? Who knows? It's a tall order for Matt Serra, but I wouldn't count him out.
You touched on something there that we've had a couple fighters on the program that agree with what you're saying, and John Alessio is the first guy that comes to mind, and we had him on after he fought and lost to Diego Sanchez, and in his mind he thought he had won, and he agreed he should have been more aggressive, but he said that judging in North America, no one gives any credit for takedown defense.
It's for the wrestler, that's all the whole thing is set up for. I'm not complaining, I'm not arguing. I love wrestling. I try to work on it every day of my life. But, I mean, let's just talk reality. Because the same round, you could see somebody takes somebody down, puts them in the fence, doesn't land one punch, and then the guys, the commentators could be saying, he can't do anything. And then the next round, the same thing could happen, and the same commentators will sit there and say, he controlled them this time. You know, it's like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing got so watered down. It's a joke. But, I mean, that's where we are. The sport's big. Look what Dana guys did. They blew it up. It's huge. It's awesome. You know, but, I mean, come on. Let's just talk reality. Things are a joke if it goes to a decision.
Do you think with the merger of Pride, I think Pride was an organization where the judging format was better for not just giving blatant points in one corner for a guy who just gets a takedown?
I got to wear a shirt that says, takedowns versus jiu-jitsu guy equals 0 points. Yeah, show it to all the judges. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, so say someone takes Minotaro down 10 times, you know what I mean, and he tries 15 arm bars, you know, in Pride, he'd probably pull it out over here.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, maybe with the merger, that's something that they're going to have to examine, because they are talking about changing the rules. There probably won't be stomps and knees to the head on the ground an opponent allowed in Pride any longer. Do you have any thoughts on that as far as the Pride rules being switched to Nevada and New Jersey?
Well, I mean, it's just about branding a product. It's about branding an MMA product. And that's what's going, and Dana guys are doing a great job on branding the product. You know, it doesn't have knees on the ground. It doesn't have these kicks, you know, so that's what they're doing. They're branding a product. And, I mean, it makes perfect sense on a business sense.
Well, there's one fighter who seems to have evolved from the kind of the wrestler stereotype that you're talking about, the blanket kind of stereotype. He's improved his skills, and that's Josh Koscheck, and he's fighting Diego Sanchez.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people are excited about that fight, BJ. Your thoughts on that fight? Do you think Koscheck has a really good chance to win this?
You know what? That's a total toss-up for me. I have no clue. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to watch and watch. The only people who knows who are going to win right now is Koscheck and Diego. I have no clue what's going to happen, How much did Koscheck improve? If Koscheck improved enough to take Diego out on the ground, it's going to be Koscheck, And I don't know where we are in Diego's striking yet. We've seen him hit Riggs. It was a flash knockdown, then Riggs panicked, got up real quick. Diego caught him with the knee,
Yeah.
Wonderful, beautiful fight on Diego's part. But we still don't know where he is with the hands. Koscheck, he improved his movement on the hands. I don't think he likes to get inside an exchange yet, but he definitely improved his stand-up, So it's going to be good, man. Koscheck is national champ. Koscheck's everything. I got no clue. This is the kind of fight that I like to see.
Yeah. Looking into the lightweight division, if you decide to move down to lightweight or even regardless if you do or don't, there's a lot of rumor. Looks like Sean Sherk's going to take on Hermes Franca in his first title defense. Your thoughts on that? Do you think Hermes Franca's got the kind of game that can beat someone like Sean Sherk?
Hey, Hermes Franca, he's like another one. I won't ever count that guy out, too. You know what? I think that might be my favorite fighter in the lightweight division right now in the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching that guy fight. Don't count him out, but then again, you got Sherk, man. Sherk's the champ, Sherk's the beast. Little Matt Hughes, so... that's what it is, man. That's a good fight. I can see Hermes doing a lot of stuff, though, Kenny didn't do too bad in his fight. Kenny did awesome, And Hermes, this is a great fight. You got a wrestler who can grab somebody and is a bull and push him in the fence. He'll exchange, too. And then you got Hermes. He knocks everybody out with that overhand right. He'll take you down if he's got a good shot. And he'll submit you from the bottom, so... What an exciting time to be alive, huh?
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people were throwing around Joe Stevenson's name as a guy that might be able to compete with Sean Sherk.
I'm surprised he's not in a title fight, but Hermes has done so much. I mean, how can you ever deny that guy, too?
Yeah. We had Nick Thompson on the show earlier this week, and he trains with Sean Sherk, and I asked him about some of the ratings that are out there as far as the lightweight division goes, and... Sean Sherk isn't necessarily at the top on some of those ratings, and I think that's probably
what he should be at lightweight. He should be number one, especially after Diaz beat Gomi. Sherk should be number one.
Yeah, I think some people out there argue that he hasn't competed enough in the lightweight division. With FCF, we've got him right near the top.
But let's just sit down and look at his career.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. He should be number one. I mean, he's the UFC lightweight champ, for God's sake.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. You know any organization bigger now that they just bought Pride,
Well, certainly when you look at the other names on that list, there's not a lot of guys on that list that you would think have a great shot at beating Sherk. I mean, of course, anyone can, but...
Yeah.
When you saw Nick Diaz against Gomi and that performance, your thoughts on Nick's display, I guess? And was that you shocked at all, or did you think that Nick had a really good shot?
It looked like Gomi gassed out. Unbelievable. It looked like in like 2 or 3 minutes he gassed out. I don't know if he didn't eat before the fight, or he got nervous, or he wasn't used to fighting outside of Japan, or whatever. But, Nick came on strong. Nick looked good. Nick looked awesome.
Do you think that's one area that Pride... In my own opinion, I'm glad that hopefully the UFC ends this. As far as the non-title bouts, Gomi's lost twice now in just over a year. Are you a fan of the non-title bouts at all, BJ?
I am a fan of the non-title bouts, actually, because if not, you'll never get to see the champ fight. You know what I mean? Sitting around there waiting for a contender to come up. If you fought all three contenders, then bring in a new guy, you can have some kind of freak show fight, which is also fun and entertaining, and it's always competitive. Look at Nick Diaz and Gomi.
Yeah.
So, I'm a fan of the non-title fights. I mean, I'm a huge WWF fan all the time, and whenever Hulk would lose a non-title fight, it'd make me feel safe. Okay, don't worry. Hulk still got the belt. So I'm a fan of the non-title fight. Plus, dude, I just set up a great rematch.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm assuming, though, that you agree with the non-title fight as long as there's a contingency plan that whoever wins, if...
Gets a rematch. It's got to be a rematch clause. But it makes perfect sense because we would have never got to see Nick Diaz and Gomi. And it's true, even though Diaz comes in and beats Gomi on his first go in Pride, he hasn't fought in Pride enough to be recognized as a Pride champion. You know what I mean? Like Gomi has. So it makes sense. But now if he comes in and whoops Gomi again, then without a doubt...
Yeah. Before you get out of here, I just want to ask your thoughts on Chuck Liddell versus Rampage Jackson. That was confirmed, I guess, last week. And to also hear your opinion, do you think Rampage Jackson's been hyped enough in the States? Some people say that this fight might be a little bit too soon as far as the American fans.
I definitely feel that fight's premature. But I mean, there's nothing else out there. I mean, there's nothing else out there to do. I mean, you don't want to fight Clinton again and something happens, he loses, you know, and the fight's off. It's good for mixed martial arts that the fight's going to happen, but without a doubt, it's not as big as it could be. Mm-hmm. Maybe it could get that big. Yeah, you know, it's premature, like you said, but there's nothing else they can do.
Do you think they hurried it up a bit? Do you think they hurried it up a bit because of the Pride merger that maybe they thought, well, in a few months we've got some other guys like Shogun or Wanderlei Silva, et cetera, to throw a chuck, so let's get Quinton Jackson that fight done with now?
I don't know.
Just because Shogun and Wanderlei both beat Quinton?
Well, I don't know. I think the Quinton and Chuck fight was probably signed a long time ago, but they probably just released it today, or they knew it was going to happen for a while. They probably knew this for over 2 months maybe already. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A while before that they announced that they bought Pride. But who knows? Only Dana White knows.
BJ, prediction on the fight with Jens before we let you go?
I really, really want to retire him, and I really, really want to break his left shoulder with a Kimura lock, you know, and then finish it and put it all away. And when you talk about knocking out BJ Penn's teeth, you better expect that he's going to break your left arm. When you start talking crazy like that, talking about you're going to knock my teeth out and you're going to tap right there, if I get your arm, you're never going to wipe your ass again with your left arm, ever again. You know, this is serious. I mean, saying something like that, knock out my teeth, ruin my appearance, I'm really going to try to break his left arm and put it away and finish it off. Every ounce of energy I got, I'm going to break that shoulder. So there it is. Hey, check out bjpenn.com for free training and free, they got free watch me training, technique of the day, everything all for free, the My Gym Show on bjpenn.com, daily show, okay?
All right, no love lost between BJ Penn and Jens Pulver. Check it out, Ultimate Fighter Season 5 premiere tomorrow night. BJ Penn, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you, bjpenn.com. Check it out. Okay, take it easy.
Thank you.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter Shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight Shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NXP corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
I guess the attitude's maybe just cultural. I take it you didn't, you know, light up a spliff before you went and trained at Militich.
No, well, that's certainly true. But, you know, for me personally, I don't think it would help my game. I would get all paranoid and freak out, so I would probably just cling to someone in as tight a guard as I could and get crushed. But
was it surprising to you that guys like Nick Diaz, you know, came back positive?
Not at all. No, it's not surprising.
Now supposedly Diego Sanchez was positive as well.
Didn't surprise me the slightest. I mean, I think, you know, I don't think it's a big problem. I mean, there's a certain kind of guy that can work, that loves to work out on it. You know, come on, man. You know, like, who cares, really? You know what I mean? It's like, drinking is worse. We all know, everybody knows that. The science is all there. I mean, it's just not the cultural of the Western culture. So, like I said, I don't want to get into that, you know, a huge discussion about marijuana, but it doesn't bother me. You know what I mean? And I'm not surprised that that these guys use it. And a lot of, you know, a lot of top level jiu-jitsu guys do like it, you know what I mean, and do enjoy it. And I think, you know, my take on it is that, you know, you got to have an open mind about pretty much everything.
I guess it does, I guess what was interesting to me is that it wasn't even seen as a vice or a vice necessarily, in the same way that, you know, if you go out, you know, if you're training in North America and you go out and get pissed one night and you can't train for a couple of days or you're bad, you know, it's almost socially acceptable, but seen as a vice in relation to your training, where marijuana didn't necessarily seem to be that. It was far more incorporated.
Well, I think, you know, that probably, you know, the opinions vary quite a bit. I think with most of the MMA guys, I don't think marijuana was as much in use. With the straight, it was more of a straight grappler's kind of thing, because, you know, MMA guys, you can't really relax when, you know what I mean? Like, you can't get in a bad position because you're going to get your face pounded off.
Right.
And they had a more professional kind of outlook. I mean, like, in Brazil right now, MMA is, finally, there is money in it. So these guys are taking it very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And you are getting guys that are more like boxing guys that are coming out of bad neighborhoods or coming from the favela or whatever and can make a living and make a good living. I mean, Nogueira is like the first guy to really hit, and he's not like from a poor background. He's from pretty wealthy, well-to-do background, but he's made a fortune, you know, and I'm sure, you know, Mauro Sperry and Murillo and all these guys who keep fighting, you know, they're doing quite well. So the money is there, and people are taking it pretty seriously. And the marijuana thing is more of a side thing, and it's much more about the straight grappling game, mm-hmm. which, of course, you know, has huge crossover, you know. But
so do they still call Sperio the Zen machine, or was that just something that was made up to market him?
I don't know. I mean, I couldn't tell you. They might call him that. I mean, he is insane. I mean, the guy has like he's a problem. You know what I mean? Like, he's got an overtraining problem. He definitely can't stop training, and he, you know, he's just going all the time, and he's just a machine. You know, the guy just goes and goes and trains three or four times a day. And you know, it's funny. I used to think that the idea that Randy Couture was keeping all these people from retiring, you know, like that Randy just keeps winning titles and championships, and mm-hmm. and like, so none of these guys who are younger than him but would love to retire can retire.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's just, I think it's with nutrition and medicine and the way people train today and train smart. You know, these guys are having great careers in their late 30s, you know, in their 40s. So
let's continue on to the book. You know, one of the next really interesting thing I think you did is you went back to Thailand, back to Fairtex, which had changed at the time, and it was basically set up for the Farangs.
Yeah.
Nice gym, beautiful settings, no more elephants in the backyard,
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah.
But you went there, you went to Thailand and actually studied meditation.
Yeah,
so
talk
a little bit about that, and talk a little bit about how you incorporated that, why you incorporated that into a book about fighting.
Well, I mean, Appy Day had always meditated, and it was something that I was always interested in, was kind of, you know, the more spiritual side of fighting, and did it really exist? And that's, you know, one of the reasons I sort of studied Tai Chi when I was in, you know, it was, part of it was I was injured and needed something to do, but part of it was, you know, you wonder, is there anything behind this? That, you know, I mean, obviously they used to fight with it back in the, you know, in the medieval China, the Tai Chi monks would fight all the time and life was worth very little, so they must have fought with it at some point. And the meditation, you know, it just, I felt like, especially at the higher level of fighting, that the mental aspect becomes more and more important. And, it's interesting. That's something that I'm still learning about. Obviously, you know, I think you never stop learning about is the way the game works at the higher end levels, and the way that the mental aspects and being mentally tough can really help you. So that was kind of what I was looking to just to experience it all. And, you know, I also thought maybe it'll help me write the book, you know, because helping me focus and, you know, writing the book is a mental exercise, and, you know, I needed all the help I could get. So I went to the northern Thailand to this meditation retreat, and, you know, I got to tell you, it was probably it might have been the hardest part of the whole trip. You know, it's easy to say that, but it was just gnarly tough because, you know, you can't speak, and all you do is meditate for 8 or 9 hours a day, and it is so boring that, you know, it's stupefyingly boring. It's, you know, it's the slowest day you've ever had in your life, and it goes on for 1,000 years, and you're only, you know, in the middle of the morning. You've got the whole rest of the day and the night to go.
What did that tell you about your North American mind?
It's noisy. Your mind is noisy, basically. You realize how full of clutter you are with all the media and all the different forms of input and your cell phone and your radio and your internet and the television going all the time. So it was really great. It brought me back to my childhood in such an interesting way. You know, when you're a kid and you can sort of just space out and, you know, look at the clouds or just sit around and look out the window for a while, which is something as an adult, you know, you lose, I think. You get caught up in deadlines and doing 8 or 10 things. You can't sleep unless you've done a lot. You've checked a bunch of things off your list for the day. So it was extremely interesting, and it really did help. I think, like, you sort of, by the end of it, I could really sort of see much more clearly what was happening, and you could sort of, what it felt like is I could see 360 degrees around the problems in my life. You know, the things that were giving me a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
I could really see them much more completely, and it took away any of their power, you know, so I wasn't afraid of anything. It was great. I mean, I think it's a neglected aspect, especially in MMA, because you focus on, you know, the hard side of martial arts so much. You know, if you go back to the old hard-soft discussion, which is much more about classical martial arts, but you focus on so much on the hard side that I think you get guys coming up, and they don't really ever get taught any of the soft stuff. And I think at the higher level, people have mastered it naturally, like Randy Couture or some of these guys have just... They've stumbled on to, you know, maybe without the training or without, you know, which maybe there isn't a good way to train it. You know, maybe you have to stumble onto it for it to be genuine. But I think there is a mental game and a way that at the higher level. It's really interesting. Let me tell you this one story. I boxed with this guy named Javier Calderon in L.A. And he's an ex-pro. He only had maybe 10 fights, but he was in, some really good camps. He was in Pernell Whitaker's camp, and he was in Camacho's camp, and he spars at Wild Card all the time. And, you know, I teach him, we do like an old school MMA thing. I teach him some Muay Thai clinch work, and he boxes, and he spars with me, and he goes really light, and he still, you know, knocks his stuffing out of me. But what was really interesting about talking to him was he maintains eye contact throughout sparring session. And I was like, well, you know, isn't that like kind of silly? Because you get tricked with mind games and stuff like that. I mean, you know, Pat Miletich, other guys, always look in the chest, and you don't worry about what his eyes are doing. Who cares what his eyes are doing? He's not going to hit you with his eyes, you know, was the refrain. But Javier was saying that he used to think the same way, but when he was sparring at Wild Card with all these, you know, top championship, you know, world number two ranked boxers, they would always look him in the eyes, and it would completely throw him. But what he said was eventually you get used to it, and you can actually, like, what he said was look through the veil, and you can kind of read your guy's mind. You can kind of see what he's thinking about and what he's going to do, and you can read his moods and become very in tune with him. And it's extremely personal because, you know, next time you spar, try it. I mean, I don't know how much sparring you do, but if staring the guy right in the eyes, it makes it much more personal, much more intimate, and it's a very different experience. And I think, you know, some of those things are really important once you start competing.
One of the central themes of meditation, and the great practitioners who write about it seems to be the transcending of one's own ego. So almost the transcending of one's own self. But that leads back into a sort of interesting dichotomy in fighters, and it seems oftentimes, so if you read things like by, I don't know, Mori Ueshiba, the guy who invented Aikido, who is, Aikido is kind of a joke of a martial art now, but that guy was a badass. And he
no,
was
sure, no, they all come from real things. That's what I was interested in, you know.
And, you know, even the Zen, there's a great Zen guy named Taisen Deshimaru, who is a Soto Zen master who took Zen into Europe, but he wrote a book called Zen and the Martial Arts as well.
Huh.
But the interesting idea that comes out of that seems to be that the more you're disassociated with your own ego, the better fighter you are, but the more peaceful you are. It's a seeming paradox. And you mentioned something like that in the book where I think it's when you're training with Miletic with the cops. And the idea is, well, should you be teaching cops stuff that, you know, that they can use hand-to-hand techniques to become even more brutal? But you mentioned that actually empirically turns out to make them less violent.
Yeah, it totally relaxes them. You know, it's again, it's about if you can keep the, you know, if the cops when they get all worked up and they have six guys pile on one perpetrator and that's when they bust his arm or something because they're all super excited. Now, if you have those same six cops, but they're all really well trained, and they're just going to be relaxed, and they'll let two guys take the guy down, you know what I mean, and take him down in a safe manner. I think that's a really good point. You know, it's funny because, you know, it brings me around to what Mario Sparri said to me, and Murillo and those guys, is they would say the most important thing for a fighter is to not have an ego and to learn from everyone. You know, everyone in the gym, and you know, the Brazilians and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu does not have any kind of, you know, mental component to it. They just do it. And even though they bring in a lot of yoga, and I'm sure, you know, what Hickson does, I don't really know. I've never met him or anything, but what it sounds like, what he does and what some of the Gracie does, it has a much more philosophical standpoint. But, there isn't like a real mental aspect to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but the fact that all these MMA guys would say that, you know, they just learn from everyone and not have an ego is the best way to improve as a fighter, the best way to get better. And you know, it's very telling to me. And it's the same thing you're saying.
As a forever learner through the whole process of this book, you know, obviously, obviously you have an ego and you talk about that in the book. So what was it like sort of putting that on the shelf? And that's the only way you learn is if you go in and say, you know, when you're training with people who you may not respect or people who you want to look good in front of, how do you put that aside? And I guess you always put that aside, no matter how good you are.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously you always have an ego, and it sneaks into everything. I mean, if we've all done this, we're rolling with somebody we know we should beat, and they get something, and we don't tap right away because we don't want to tap to this guy, and then you almost get hurt, you know
yeah.
what I mean? Or you do get hurt. I mean, everybody does that, you know. Or, oh, yeah, we'll roll half speed, and then, of course, as soon as you start getting beat, you're rolling full speed.
Or to a girl.
Yeah, exactly. it never works that way. So, I mean, but again, I think for me it was easy to go in because, you know, I'll say, oh, I'm not a fighter, you know, I'm just a writer. I'm going in here to learn, and also I was going in with, you know, like you're going in with Mario Sparri or Pat Miletic, and you're not going to, you can't compete with those guys. You got to just try and learn something and hope they don't kill you, you know. So for me, it was, some of that was easy. But, you know, I think it's, you do have to maintain an ego. You know, you have to, if you're going to fight, you got to want to win. You know what I mean? Don't make that mistake, you know,
well,
you know. So
that seems to break up into two very notable different types of fighters. There seem to be fighters who can go into a fight basically liking or being indifferent to their opponent, and that's what they prefer. And there seems to be fighters who need to get themselves worked up and have a real animosity to fuel the fight. So talk about that. You must have seen in everywhere you went these two sort of forms exemplified.
Yeah, no, I think you know there's definitely the two things. I mean, I think you know part of it is that dealing with fear for a fighter is a very important thing, and guys do it in different ways. I mean, I think you could easily argue that Muhammad Ali, the way he talked, he was really talking to himself the whole time. You know, I'm the greatest, I'm the greatest. He wasn't really talking to anybody else but himself and trying to control his own fear. And what's incredible is you watch Floyd Mayweather when he beat up Arturo Gatti. You know, Gatti never laid a glove on him. And at the end of the fight, Floyd falls down and is saying, God is great. God is great. Like, he's in tears. So Floyd had all this fear. And the way that Floyd is trying to punk Mayweather out now, it's really interesting to me because, not Mayweather, De La Hoya out now, it's very interesting because you think, you know, Floyd's going to kill De La Hoya, but he's obviously scared of him because of the way he's talking. So I think, you know, fighters have to manage fear. And I think everybody's going to have that aggression they can tap into as soon as they get in the fight. And, you know, some guys, they need to get hit once before they really turn on. But they will turn on, and they will, you know, come with it, or else they wouldn't be doing, you know, professional fighting. So there, you know, there's different ways of managing fear, but in the end, I think, you know, there's an aggression they turn on when they get in the ring. And again, the smarter guys, you know, in my opinion, the better fighters, the smarter guys, don't get clouded up in aggression and don't get clouded up in hate and trash talk. You know, that's sort of more the B-level guys, but mm-hmm. not always the case. But I mean, in my opinion, and what drew me to basically to the whole idea of the book was how good of people these great fighters seem to be. I mean, I kept seeing these guys who were just the best people I'd ever met, and just, you know, really, really nice guys, and yet they were professional fighters, and sort of trying to reconcile those two things was a lot of what the book turned into to me.
I made a joke to, we interviewed on the show a Canadian guy who fought on the first North American Pride card, and I said to him, it must have made you feel good, like looking in the pre-fight room, looking over at Fedor and thinking, yeah, he's just as scared as me.
Yeah, right. Well, Fedor's a freak. Don't talk about Fedor. He's not part. He doesn't play by the rules. But for instance, Vanderlei Silva's whole stare down routine, you know, it's like, yeah, okay. But then as soon as he wins, he's all smiles and he's laughing and he's crying and stuff. You know, it's like that stare down routine is as much about fear as it is about I'm going to destroy you. You know what I mean? He's turning that into something else, in my opinion. And Fedor, of course, is just, you know, it's what's hilarious about Fedor is that all the fighters and everybody talks about him. Just like, what does that guy eat? You know, he's like a robot or something. You know, I mean, like nobody gets him. Even though, you know, like Oleg Taktarov is like, yeah, I don't know, man, the guy's a freak. You know.
And Oleg was the prototype of that kind of fighter.
Yeah, no, I mean it's no one gets Fedor. I mean, I don't. He hasn't fought. No, Lindland soon, right? That Bodo.
Yeah, right away. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's going to end happily for.
Well, and the interesting thing though is I think that is that Lindland is kind of the same type of guy.
Yeah, no, he totally is. He's a gamer. You know, he's going to bring it. He's super tough. I just, you know, to me, like, size is a very important thing, and just, you know, it's a big, I think he should fight a, you know, light heavy before you fight the best heavyweight in the world, you know what I mean?
Well, there was almost a glimmer of humanity in Fedor when Hunt was trying to crank, on New Year's Eve, when Hunt was trying to crank that Americana on him, and Fedor kind of, like, he almost had this moment where he looked pissed off.
He looked vulnerable.
And then rolled him back over and put exactly the same arm lock on Hunt and finished the fight. Like,
right,
just to say,
right.
that's how you do that.
Let me show you how you do it. Now, you don't have it quite right. Let me just show you one thing. Yeah.
Let's talk about the end of the book when you're sort of wrapping things up and you're becoming more thoughtful and reflective, and you've gone through this whole process where you're kind of doing something in the book that's unique, because I guess George Plimpton is before many people's time who are listening to this show, but there's this American journalist named George Plimpton who we would probably know from his in television commercials in the 80s. But before that, he went around and tried professional boxing and tried to be a quarterback in the NFL. And as a journalist, was going through these things. But you sort of take that to the next step. So you're not taking snaps in practice, but you're getting in professional fights.
I'd love to.
And you know, so you're kind of doing this at the same time as a journalist, but very much for yourself as well. So at the end of the day, the book's name is A Fighter's Heart. What kind of heart do you have?
Me, I understand what a fighter's heart is. Yeah, I have a fighter's heart. Sure, go ahead. You know, I mean, I know what my limitations are. You know, and I know, you know, that I'm no world beater, and you know, so on and so forth. And but I definitely know, like, you know, in when I get in a fight, I try to win, and I don't quit. And you know, if I have a chance, I'll take it. And you know, you go down swinging if you can. You know, and I think that's what's having a fighter. It's interesting you mentioned George Plimpton, because I always would say, like, you know, George is a much better writer than me, but I was a better fighter than him, you know. So that was the hope anyway. George was a total pencil neck. But Shadowbox is a great book and stuff. If you got a minute, I'll tell you a funny story. One of the Men's Journal editors actually wanted me to fight Mike Tyson as a story.
Oh, Jesus.
And I was like, you know, dude, like, you don't understand, like, what that means, you know. It's like, because George Plimpton fought Archie Moore for two-minute rounds with him or something. But the difference is that, you know, there's a bunch of differences. First of all, George Plimpton is a hilarious writer, and, you know, is not trying to be a fighter at all. And I was at least trying to be a fighter.
Right.
And taking it seriously, you know, I take it seriously. I tried to really improve and become as good as I could. And second, Archie Moore is a lot different than Mike Tyson. Archie Moore was a journeyman for a long time, had been around, forever and fought everybody before he got his title shot and won the title. So, you know, he didn't have the unstable quality of Mike Tyson. You know what I mean? Like, I could fight Mike. I could write that without ever fighting Mike. You know, I'm scared. He hits me, I fall down. You know, it's like, okay. There you go. What I came back, I was like, listen, why don't I do this? Why don't, you know, have Mike Tyson train me for 3 weeks for an amateur boxing match, you know, or whatever. So, like, that way I'll get to hang out with Mike and pick his brain and hear his stories and kind of, you know, I wanted to learn from him. What's, you know, because he's not an idiot. The guy's pretty smart in some regard. And he's an interesting character. But they wouldn't go for it. So, anyway, never happened. But that's my – I almost fought Mike Tyson story.
Well, maybe that's something that's better a story than a lived experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all you're going to do is try not to piss him off. I mean, basically, I can't handle Mike's punch. I know that for a fact.
So,
but, yeah, go ahead, please.
No, sorry. So in the end of the day, then, in the end of the day, what I found was interesting. First of all, I have to say, finished up the book, a couple nights ago, and on the last page, it was probably the best page for me because you busted out some, Cormac McCarthy.
Nice, yeah.
And mentioned, the judge's speech from, Blood Meridian, which is probably one of my favorite books.
Oh, good.
A book I try and read every couple of years for sure.
Oh, good.
What's the relationship between, what's the relationship for you between a fighter's heart and these things that are always associated with fighting, like violence and fear?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's what I've really learned and what I've tried, what I'm trying to sort of explain to the mainstream world is like that fighting really isn't about violence and hurting people, you know what I mean? That's kind of like the least it's about. Really what it's about is it's about yourself and trying to make it yourself better and testing yourself. I mean, fighting in a ring or a cage and fighting in a, you know, for money or not, as an amateur, but not, you know, not bar fighting and stuff like that is different. But, so, I mean, I the Cormac stuff, I mean, it just it came to me because I wanted to kind of put a little personal stamp on the end of this whole thing and make clear how I feel about, you know, about manhood and masculinity. And I've been heckled by people you know, oh, you don't know anything about masculinity. Who hadn't read the book? You know, didn't understand. And I was like, well, let me read you the last chapter, and then you can talk. And you know, I think fighting gets a really bad rap by people who are scared of it and don't understand it, and don't understand the kind of purity that comes out of it. I mean, the more you fight, the better off you are as a person, the better you become, and the sort of, it's, you know, it's all about testing yourself. The more you have less to prove, you know, like all these UFC guys, Tim Sylvia, and all these guys, they used to get in bar fights when they were young, and then as soon as they start fighting in a cage, that all drops away. You know, there's no need to prove yourself because you have proved yourself. There's no need to start fights or, you know, because you just don't have those kind of peripheral manhood issues. You're more concerned with the truth.
So it's just really, it's really at the point where sort of you make the transition as a young man concerned with machismo as to an older man concerned with fighting.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, as an older man concerned with the truth, you know what I mean, concerned with the reality of what's going on. And, you know, and it's not, and that's why it's not just fighting, it's, you know, it's building things. Like Pat Miletich, you know, yeah, he's a great fighter, but what he's built is this incredible gym, and he's this school that's much, much bigger than himself, and he's really made something that's given, you know, it feeds hundreds of people and, you know, takes care, and it's this giant machine. And, you know, Apide Sitharun in Thailand, he runs a fund that takes care of older fighters, and, you know, he teaches anybody who he can, you know, how to fight and how to do Muay Thai and how to defend themselves and not be afraid. And, you know, there's all these elements to this that I think are really important, and the great fighters, you know, find ways to do that.
So is it surprising to you that now many of the great MMA fighters in America are coming from these types of fraternities? American Top Team, Kickboxing Academy, Team Quest.
No, not at all. Because it's such a team. It's a team sport. I mean, it really is. I think MMA has shown you really need a strong team behind you. You need, you know, guys who can protect you when you're getting ready to fight, and guys who can get you ready and get you in the right position.
Yeah, I guess it's no mistake that those older fighters in Thailand often need taken care of. You look at the old tutorials from the 70s and 80s. And the guy who's teaching is basically looks like the only guy that's left alive, maybe half paralyzed in the face, and they look rough. That's a tough sport.
Well, I mean, Happy Day's fine. You know, that's the thing is everybody, you know, but Happy Day's running. He's 63 or something. He's out running, holding pads for people. He's fine, you know. So, you know, different athletes can handle different things. I mean, but I think you need that stuff, and like that's what one thing boxing does so well is that the older guys do teach the younger guys, you mm-hmm. know, at all levels.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows, you know.
And you seem to have a profound respect for that tradition in boxing, like these old guys, you know, new people say the new way is the best, and but these old guys, you definitely pointed out in the book, have this profound insight and understood boxing at a completely and utterly different level than the young guys do, and the current conventional wisdom does now.
Yeah, I mean, I think those, you know, because of its history, you know, guys who have been watching boxing and studying it and trying to win for 50 years have a huge advantage over guys who just got into it 3 years ago. You know, mm-hmm. You know, this guy who holds mitts for me and Ed Wildcard, McAfoley, he's got like, you know, so he holds for Tony too, and he's got like, you know, 60 or 70 fights, and you know, half of them are losses, but he's got just a ton of fights, you know what I mean? He's a great guy, but he would fight when he wasn't in shape, and he would just fight all the time, but, you know, he understands boxing in a kind of intuitive way that, you know, I could never do, you know, with my limited experience.
So, last question has to do with, MMA, of course. Your first experience with martial arts being Muay Thai, elbows in MMA or not?
You know, it's a tough one. I for me personally, I want to keep them because I think I have some sneaky elbows that would work for me. But, you know, Pat Miletich has said he thinks they should be out, and I kind of agree because, you know, it is often these huge cuts that don't really change the fight, except for they just cut the crap out of somebody. I mean, I think I think they're okay as long as you can let fights go when guys are bleeding hard, which was what, that was incredible that, that UFC fight night, or it was a tough show. What was his name? Was it, Babyface, that blonde kid?
Oh, Sean Sherk.
No.
Deweese.
Deweese got, I mean, that was, and I was so impressed they didn't stop that, because there, it was like a horror movie, you know, he was like bathing in blood.
Yeah, that was pretty
But ugly. It was a nothing cut. It didn't mean anything. It didn't hurt him at all. The fact they didn't stop that, I was totally impressed by. I mean, that's the real problem with elbows, is it, you know, you get a cut on the ground from a little elbow that does not change the fight at all. And the guy who was crushing this guy now has a cut on his head, and now they're going to stop the fight. He's going
to
lose.
So to defend elbows, do we have to see someone literally put on a Muay Thai clinic with some sweet reverse elbows and stuff like that?
I'd love to see it. I mean, you know, there's some really sneaky ones that I think it's funny. And the Burmese do some a lot of twisting back, you know, kind of back fisting elbows and little sneaky little nasty things, like Genki Sudo used to do his back fists all the time and stuff. I mean, so there's definitely, I think maybe elbow standing should be allowed and not on the ground or something. I don't know. I mean, I understand both sides of the argument, and I think it does suck when a fight, the whole flow of a fight gets changed just on a cut that doesn't really have any relevance, you know, so.
Well, Sam, I think I got to let you go because I'm going to get in the Dutch for making the show go too long. But it's you're a great guy to talk to, and the book is fantastic, and I can't recommend it enough. And anyone who has any interest in fighting or MMA has got to pick this up. So, Sam Sheridan, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Really appreciate you having me on, and let's talk again, man. It was good talking to you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
Hi, guys. This is Jeff the Inferno Joslin, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio is the newly crowned Extreme Cage Combat Light Heavyweight Champion, Roger Hollett, who had a big win over Ricardo Francois this past weekend in Halifax to claim that title. Roger, how are you doing this afternoon?
Pretty good. Not bad.
I guess the first question is your thoughts on the fight. It didn't take too long. What was the game plan going in, and did you expect to get a victory that quick, Roger? I mean, 20 seconds or something like that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't expect it that quick. I mean, I trained that, you know, I was expecting him to try and keep me on the outside, keep me on the end of his jab, and, you know, he threw a couple lazy ones at me, and I gauged his distance really quick and just was able to get inside and get my shots off and did what I trained to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's noted for having some stand-up capabilities, and he's, you know, really, really tall and lanky.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was no question in your mind that you wanted to take it to the ground as soon as possible?
No, I wasn't trying to take it to the ground. I just wanted to get inside past his distance where I could get my shots off right.
And right.
Just I gauged his jab and got inside and, you know, just took it from there.
And one of the reports I read, well, the report from Peter Parsons, our correspondent out there in the Maritimes, he said that at first it almost looked like Ricardo was tapping, but the referee didn't notice right away, or what exactly happened?
Well, he tapped, and as I'm hitting him, right, and then I see him tap, and I see I'm still hitting him, like the ref didn't grab me. And so I look up at again, and you know, then he starts trying to tap in between my punches. I said to the ref, look, he's tapping. And I mean, I can't stop punching because he'll say he didn't tap. And,
mm-hmm.
So I just kept punching and told him, you know, look, he's tapping, and then he grabbed me, yeah.
So what's it like? I mean, you win the title in your hometown. It's got to be a good feeling, the first championship belt in your MMA career.
Yeah. Oh, geez, yeah. Great feeling. What we're training to do, you know, keep on going.
You know, we've had you on the program before, and we've had Peter Martel on as well, and who's, I should say, for listeners who don't know, he's one of the promoters at ECC and then one of your jiu-jitsu instructors and trains with you at Team Titans. What is the scene like for mixed martial arts in Halifax now? It seems like it just keeps on getting better. Are people becoming more knowledgeable about the sport, Roger?
Oh, yeah. I mean, with it all over the TVs now, I mean, everybody just completely loves it. Like, all the bars are packed in this city when there's a UFC or anything on that's showing it. Like, every bar jam-packed, so everybody just loves it now, right? No question about that.
I wanted to ask you about your last fight with Mike Maurer. I was there covering the MFC in February for Full Contact Fighter. And, you know, my first question for you was actually in regards to sort of, not that you, people, of course, I should say for listeners who don't know, you knocked out Mike Maurer fairly quickly in 35 seconds, something like that. Mike Maurer is a professional football player in Edmonton Eskimos, fullback for the Canadian Football League. And you're fighting him in the city where he plays. And it seemed like people were fairly well receptive to you when you won, etc. But was it tough going into that kind of environment? I mean, when I was there, I was quite surprised. There was a lot of media, a lot of attention. I think some of the Eskimos were there themselves. Kind of a tough place for a guy to walk in and knock out a local sports star.
Yeah, well, you know, I was expecting, you know, to be booed. Like, I knew it would be like at home, you know, a lot of fans down here. And I was totally expecting everything that happened, and it didn't bother me a bit. No, going in, I just went in and did what I trained to do.
You know, going into that fight, your first three wins in your MMA career were all by submission, and Team Titans has got a reputation for producing some top-notch grapplers out of Halifax where you train. And going in, I think people sort of expected this to be a fight where Mike Maurer tried to get it to the ground. He had some wrestling background. He's been training a little jiu-jitsu. And then some of your post-fight interviews, you talked about you had noticed that he kept his hands low. Was that your intention going in all from the get-go, was to try to exploit him on his feet?
Yeah, oh yeah, well, you know, I seen a mistake that he was making, and so, yeah, I was going to try and capitalize on it.
Tell us a little bit about that, your training as far as the stand-up goes. It's not obviously just only jiu-jitsu. You guys train all aspects of MMA, so tell us a little bit about some of your coaches and who you train with to develop your game outside of just the jiu-jitsu aspect.
Outside jiu-jitsu, well, Robert Walker is my main trainer, so he's also a Muay Thai champion, you know, he knows all the ins and outs of Muay Thai, so we'll work with him, like, you know, all the time. Just my jiu-jitsu, I do, you know, lots of plyometrics, you know, all kinds of strength trainings and endurance, and conditioning, and, you know, don't miss that, try not to miss any aspects of the training, you know.
After the win over Mike Maurer, did you have a chance to see the local media, some of the newspaper, and some of the coverage in Edmonton? There,
I saw the papers the next day a little bit, but not much after that. No.
Yeah, I was there for a day after, and some of the papers had fairly favorable reviews about MMA, but there was a couple stories that seemed like they were quite shocked about the viciousness of the knockout. And do you think that was more put in the spotlight, Roger, because it was one of the local Edmonton Eskimo football players, that perhaps it was more shocking in that sense to see one of their local stars knocked out in such a dramatic fashion? Or do you think it was just, you know, reflecting some maybe the ignorance of some of the journalists that showed up to cover that fight?
Yeah, I think, like, the journalists obviously that showed up were probably football journalists and had never been to an MMA event. And, you know, they're just reporting on the stuff, you know, they know nothing about, mm-hmm. really.
And then as far as the media goes, in Halifax, I remember there was, I think, one of the CBC was doing a story on the Halifax mixed martial arts scene. Evan Solomon was there. I think it was for the first ECC show. And there was a little bit of reservation from some of the local media in Halifax in regards to MMA. Is that changing as well, just like the fans? You mentioned the fans are packing the places. Are the local mainstream media starting to be more knowledgeable about MMA?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You mean at first, yeah, we had the same problem here, like everybody. There's a few reporters who thought they had, you know, this big say about it, and they were telling everybody how bad a sport it was. And then, yeah, but now everybody seems to be showing up at the sports, and, you know, these guys are eating all their words. And these guys haven't even attended an event. Mm-hmm. And they're making all these comments about our sport, you know, so. But now, they're eating their words now, so, you know.
I wanted to ask you, and this seems like it's getting a little bit of hype already, it looks like you're going to be fighting Jason Day, who's one of the better, mm-hmm. another great light heavyweight in Canada, out of Lethbridge. Yep. And after your win in Edmonton, you said in the post-fight in-ring interview with Scott Zur that I guess Jason Day had made some comments about how he's going to beat you in less than 2 minutes. And from what I've read, there's some reports on the Maximum Fighting Championship's website that Jason Day is continuing that thought, that prediction.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what are your thoughts on Jason Day and that kind of prediction? Does that get you riled up?
Yeah, oh, well, geez, training is going to be a joy now because now he's calling. He's starting with some name calling. So, you know, he's bringing it to another level. So I'm definitely, the ref might have a hard time getting me off of him. So I'm going to teach him a real good lesson.
So what name calling? I hadn't read any of that kind of thing. What, can you be more specific?
He's on the website. He thinks he's going to hit me with his little penguin arms or something. I don't know what.
What are your thoughts on Jason Day as a fighter? He's a guy who had some problems early on in his career and has really turned things around. He's won the vast majority of his fights over the last couple of years. More known as kind of a ground and pound sort of fighter. Is that what you think he's going to try to do against you, Roger? Is get you on your back?
He's going to be trying to hang on to me for dear life to make sure I don't hit him. So you know, I mean he's top five in Canada for sure. You know, he's not going to be a slouch in there by any means, but, you know, his game plan is going to definitely change once I hit him.
There's been some talk in the light heavyweight circles and MMA observers in Canada that Jason Day, if he gets another couple big wins, that he might have a shot at the UFC. Do you look at this opportunity, Roger, as to sort of get your name above him, if you can beat him? How many fights out do you think, if you beat Jason Day, is it going to take for you to start getting some attention south of the border?
I don't know. You know, we'll see. I'm just going to keep taking it one at a time. I'm not going to look past anybody. And, you know, this is my next fight. I don't have anything planned right yet. There's talk of maybe another Halifax show in the summertime. They might do a little small one. Or, you know, if Pavlich wants to put another show at MFC, we'll see. You know, I don't have any plans yet, so we'll see what happens.
Are you able to train full-time at this point in your career, or do you have
right
to?
Now, yeah. I'm able to train full-time.
And has that been the situation since you got into professional fighting, or is that just more of a recent?
It's a recent thing. You know, I picked up some good sponsors, like, you know, Bubbles Mansion. I worked there. They sponsored me really good. Cars and Trucks or Us is really taking care of me, you know. Everything's just going good now, so.
What has that meant for your career? I know sometimes we have fighters on, and you know, this show's kind of one of those shows that we've got some guys that are way up there in the UFC, making significant dollars, and then we'll have guys that are starting out in the career and making waves like yourself. And you know, the difference, so many of those fighters often have to work full time, sometimes working 40, 50 hours a week before they can train. What has that meant for your training? What difference has it brought to your game, Roger, to be able to train full time now?
Well, it's more you get your proper rest. Like, I used to have to work, you know, 6-7 hour days, too. I was working on a dock, had to go, you know, go train for 4 or 5 hours, then go to work. I worked at a bar at nighttime, so it was it's tough to get your rest, get all the food that you need, and, you know, it's really hard on a fighter when they don't have good sponsors to take care of them really well, you know.
You talked about Jason Day being a top five light heavyweight in Canada. I also read that he's discussing the possibility of moving down to 185. But who else would you throw in that? Victor Valimaki is a guy that beat Jason. He's got a fight coming up against Alessio Sakara at UFC 70.
Yeah.
But if you were to beat Jason, one would think that you probably have a shot at Victor Valimaki down the road. Is that something you would look forward to as well?
Well, you know, if Victor's, he's got the belt at the MFC, you know, I'd like to fight him someday, you know, that's what's going to have to happen. If he's going to stay in the UFC, I'm sure he's going to do really well against his Sakara fight. So if he moves on, then, I don't know, we'll see who's next.
Yeah. Who else would you throw in the top five category? Some other names, Todd Gallagher.
King of the Cage, I think, Galbraith is King of the Cage, isn't he?
He's fought with Bodog Fight, And he's been in some TKO fights as well in the last couple of years, but...
Yeah, there's a few guys kicking around still, yeah, for sure.
Martin Desilet, I guess, is another guy from the TKO organization that was making waves until Todd Gallenberg beat him.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always tough guys out there.
My final question for you is just in regards to some of your other Team Titans teammates. Maybe just do a quick recap of how some of your guys did at the ECC this past weekend.
All our guys did great, you know. Tanea had fell in a little short, but was doing, like, you know, really good up until then. Just got caught with a kick to the ribs there. She had bad ribs and got kicked right in them, so, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
did phenomenal, perfect.
So this before we let you go, though, June 22nd, that is a go. Is that contract actually signed, or is it just still being bantered about with your fight with Jason Day?
It's pretty much a go. I think everybody's all signed up and ready to go.
All right. Well, Roger Hollett, congratulations on winning the ECC Light Heavyweight Championship this past weekend, and we look forward to your fight with Jason Day. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Excellent. Thanks for the call.